Thank you. I'd like to thank the organizing committee for giving me an opportunity to present our work at this very distinguished section. And I'd like to acknowledge my collaborators from the Osteoporosis Clinical Center and Research Program at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Also to mention that this research was supported by the Wisconsin Partnership Program and the Duluth Clinic Foundation. Let's see if this works. Yep, all right. Okay. Vitamin D has been quite a topic in the past few years, and we're quite aware that the widespread low dietary intake of vitamin D and limited sun exposure lead to endemic low vitamin D status worldwide. The adverse effects of vitamin D deficiency on skeletal health have been very well described. However, just recently, we more and more recognize the non-skeletal effect associated with low vitamin D status. Only few foods naturally contain vitamin D, and supplementation or adherence to supplementation, even in controlled clinical trials, is very poor. So it seems that food fortification may be a logical way to deal with correction of vitamin D status in a population basis. So currently, foods that are fortified with vitamin D have very small amounts of D per serving, and very, very little research has been done really on what amounts are needed and how those amounts affect the status, the D status in the population. So I mentioned that the adherence to vitamin D supplementation is very poor. So do people take supplements? Don't have a lot of information about D supplementation per se, but we do have data from the Women's Health Initiative, fairly large, across all the different trials and observational studies. And the mean intake for calcium reported in all the studies for WHI was about 1,150 milligrams per day, and mean vitamin D intake about 365 international units per day. And I'd like to remind you that at the time of that study, the recommendation for vitamin D intake was 400, and we are actually expanding different numbers coming up this month. So in all of the, if taking into account all women who participated in with WHI, the long-term adherence to combination calcium and D was about 60%. And only 52% of women responded to the question that they took dietary supplement in the last months. And when they were asked about regular use, you can see that the numbers go even further down. So what do we do? We decided to do kind of a proof of concept clinical trial that was trying to answer the three questions. Can food fortification with much larger amount of D than currently recommended could normalize vitamin D status in women? Does that 25-hydroxy-D, which is a measure of vitamin D status, responds to vitamin D fortified food differ by age? And finally, does the body composition affect the response to vitamin D fortified food? Our proof of concept study was a double blind placebo control trial. We fortified a chocolate disc we tried to fortify it with 2,500 international units, and participants in the study were supposed to take that disc daily. They were on the study for 4 months, and the trial included healthy community dwelling women coming from three different age groups. We looked at younger women. Most of them were college students, 20 to 30 years old. We looked at early postmenopausal women, 55 to 65, and later postmenopausal women, 75 and older. So here's the study preparation, a low-calorie chocolate disc. We lovingly called it a cookie. So among people who heard about our study was the cookie study. So it's always nice to be on the positive side, especially when it's low calorie. Now, I mentioned to you that we tried to put 2,500 international units in the cookie. Now, there's plenty of issues with putting vitamin D in the food. So when the small company in Wisconsin prepared the cookies for us and we did the biochemical analysis and bioavailability of D in the cookies, it came down to about 2,300. But we said, okay, we're still happy about that. Three groups, as I mentioned before, the parentheses gives you the number of participants that were recruited in each group. Inclusion-exclusion criteria were fairly simple. We asked participants not to take more than 400 international units daily in addition to what they were getting in the study. So they were allowed to take multivitamin if they were recommended to do so by their primary care physician. And we asked them not to use sunscreen if they were spending time outside. That proved to be a difficult requirement. And exclusion criteria only limit to known conditions and factors that possibly could affect vitamin D metabolism. And of course, since we were offering chocolate, we didn't want anyone in the study who had allergy to it. Outcome measure, normally we measure vitamin D status by measuring serum 25-hydroxy-D. Those who are interested in looking at the assay information, it's there. We also looked at safety of the preparation, therefore serum and 24-hour urine calcium was measured in a routine clinical manner at baseline, months 1, 2, and at the end of study. We also looked at parathyroid hormone and the markers of bone turnover to make sure that we are okay on that side as well. And we measured body composition using DEXA. Statistical analysis were performed using SAS, all the usual way to do it. I don't want to spend too much time on that, but I can definitely answer questions if there are any. Overall, we had 99 community-dwelling women who participated in the study between February 2008 and August 2009. But we, as expected, there were some baseline differences between the age group groups in BMI, creatinine, albumin, and PTH, and one of the markers of bone turnover. Younger women had lower weight, creatinine, parathyroid hormone, and BSAP, and higher albumin, as you would expect. However, there were no statistical differences between placebo and D groups in any of the demographic or clinical characteristics. That sounds very nice. Always happy when the randomization works. I won't spend much time on these baseline characteristics. However, I do want to mention that the average age of the younger group was about 25 years old. The middle group was 60 years old, and seniors on average were 79. So how did we do in terms of the baseline prevalence of low vitamin D status? And I present you information by both placebo and D group. You can see that there are some differences, although not statistically significant. 37% of women in placebo group were below what we had chosen, a cutoff level of 30 nanograms per milliliter, to be the boundary between optimal and non-optimal or suboptimal vitamin D status, and 52% of women in the vitamin D were low. very surprising and actually a happy result was that the compliance to cookies, you know, who doesn't like cookies, was in all groups exceeded 90%. Still, there were some who did not take the cookie, whether busy life or other reasons. We have collected the cookies at the end, unused cookies, and we're able to actually come up on average what the amount of vitamin D was actually consumed by the participants. And we got a little bit down, 2,200, still above the 400 international unit that is currently recommended, but definitely below what we hoped for. Main result, we're looking at the change of 25-hydroxy-D between baseline and end of study. So everyone starts at zero. The filled circles show the D group, and the open circles show the placebo group. Remember, we did allow them to take up to 400 international units as multivitamin, and the younger group showed that they weren't really using sunscreen in placebo group. So a little bit increased, but not sufficient enough. You can definitely see that the vitamin D group had shown a tremendous response. How it does fare with what we know from the literature? We did not do, of course, the head-to-head comparison, whether people were taking the cookie or taking the supplement. But if we were recalculate what that change in the vitamin D, I should hurry. It actually compares very well to the supplement. Effect of age, not much to spend time. Again, open circles, the placebo group, closed circles are D group. Both age groups, all of the age group responded in a very similar manner. Prevalence of D status at the end, remember, the placebo group was 37 at baseline, and it states 37 at the end of the study. The vitamin D group was 52 low at baseline. 11% still were low at the end, but you can see that it wasn't really too low. It's between that 40, 25 and 30. Safety measure, no differences in serum or urine calcium throughout the study, therefore it was okay to take so much vitamin D. No differences in response to 25 hydroxy D increase in those who took the vitamin D by body composition. All right, skip on limitations. They're pretty obvious. Couple words in the summary. Food fortification with 2,200 international units of D safely improved vitamin D status in most women who participated in the study. The increased, observed increase was very well compared and similar to what is known from other literature on using the supplements, which is also a good response, giving us an idea that vitamin D in food is bioavailable and works as it should. That high dose that we were using still did not assure adequacy in all women, so more research needs to be done in that particular area. In our small study, we did not see differences by age or body composition, but again, there are a lot of issue why not. We may not have had a diverse population, enough diverse population in our study, and there's definitely more information needed looking into the underlying mechanisms in vitamin D metabolism and how it relates to other diseases. Thank you. Is there a time for question?
You might have skipped this on the limitation slide. So why did you only include white women in the study?
This is, come from Minnesota and Wisconsin. our demographics are not very favorable to diversity. We decided to look, and this is actually the first phase of the study, and we just wanted to look at the concept and the effect of age. The second portion of the study is ongoing, hoping to finish it by March, looking at the effect of ethnicity, and there are rural Caucasian and Native American women who are participating in that study currently, and the next phase in, we're waiting the funding where we actually have all the races and ethnicities presented in the vitamin D fortification food, then we can really look at other effects such as, you know, skin color, cultural approaches to life in terms of, you know, dietary requirements, location, and so forth. So very, very much at the beginning of the of that road, and wanted to be fairly narrow so we can answer some of the questions, specifically safety and effect of age, and then go from there.
I guess, are you already having problems in relation to this question? In the second phase, of the, well, it'll be your third phase. So many African American women don't tend to wear sunscreen, which is probably going to be an issue.
We do actually, yeah. Right, right, right. All of those are very interesting questions. We do collect information. I didn't present it there. Usual patterns of what people wear when outside. So we could potentially estimate the amount of or the surface, skin surface exposed. And people usually fairly give a good estimate of how much time they spend outside. So there are ways of doing estimation. It's not the best, but that's the best we have. And remember, in northern Minnesota and northern Wisconsin, where we are, we actually, even if we spend all the time outside sunning from October to April, there still will not be any vitamin D produced by the skin. I don't know if someone wants to be out there in the minus 40 temperatures, but oh well.
Thank you.
Thank you.